in Hungary and how I should adapt in Hungary. And I started going to the Pride parades and getting involved, and the company I work for is really involved in Pride. So I think this is one of the biggest changes, because in Brazil I was still finding out who I was, and I didn't have time to grow that personality that I was back then. And Hungary was this laboratory for me as a person. And through these ups and downs, I think I managed to understand what are the issues of the country, what are the things that I have to have a voice on or things that I can help, but also understand my place and yeah, in general, that's it.
That's you've conducted the ultimate stress test of you weren't maybe ready as a person in general, like even if you stayed in Brazil, you would have had to gone through a lot of steps to actually like find your footing in who you might be and what you need to feel okay around you. And then you dropped into some place where you don't even know how to ask information in a store, let alone you know, minority rights are being dealt with.
Yeah, it was insane. I think not, and I wasn't a good English speaker back then, so I was like getting around and
you essentially like ticked all the difficulty levels, switches on, like no assist, no nothing.
Yes. Luckily, we had the scholarship that would assist us with the money, but in general, how to survive in a different country, everything was pretty new, and I was checking boxes every year, every month, I guess.
So I think it's what the story you just told is I'm not sure if it's typical, because it's so weird, because Octagon comes around again, because I spoke with Sid, who is an Indian dude, and he said he also got harassed by far right people at Octagon.
Really?
And I think it's a completely different story, because he was talking about how when he's wearing winter clothes, because he works at like a big company and he can afford like a nice jacket in winter, nobody bothers him because they can see that when he's layered up he can afford, you know, the North Face jacket, but when it's the summer and he's only wearing a shirt and he's clearly like an Indian guy, then he gets, I don't know, like confrontation. I don't know why Octagon is like, you know, it's Andrash, it's supposed to be like, you know, you have the Versace on the left and the Gucci on the right, and it's like, why? I don't know. I think it's just like a statistical anomaly that shit like this happens. Sorry, beep on Octagon.
I think that someone goes to, I think it's because it's a convergence place. I think everybody stops there. I don't know. But this is a very interesting point, because I even get a little bit emotional about it. Because if, in my case, I'm a mixed race person in Brazil, and I can say I'm black, but I'm not. In Brazil, people wouldn't call me black. They would call me brown, or the term that we say is pardo, which is a mix of, it's like many tones of brown. And this thing about the your Indian friend, colleague, telling that he was wearing fancy clothes in the winter and he wasn't getting harassed. I feel that the same when I'm like riding a bus here. And if I don't have a book open while I'm sitting in a bus, people usually don't sit next to me. And when I open a book or I'm reading something or I show a phone or something that's more expensive, people won't hesitate to come around me. And winter time, I think it happens the same when your skin color is not as much exposed. And I think that happens here. It happens in Brazil, too. I'm not saying that we don't have racism in Brazil, but it's even worse there, I guess.
I think it's more sophisticated, no? Because there's like more...
There are nuances.
More ingredients.
Yeah, and if you think Brazil's history, we had, it's proven in documents that we had the process of eugenics, which was to whiten the Brazilian population back then when we were colonized, because we had a lot of slavery, and also the native Brazilians, none of them were white. And in the colonization process and the miscegenation, we call it the miscegenation or mixed race, we had a lot of people that looked like me. So the white people would rape the slaves or the indigenous people. and they would have mixed race children. If they were lighter, they would go to the big houses, as we called. If they were darker, they would work as slaves. And to this day, this difference of your skin tone really dictates how much privilege you have. And we call that colorism. And today, I think it's really hard for all of the Brazilians to even define themselves because of how mixed we are. And the majority of our population is considered black or pardo. But people that self-affirmate as black are only like 10, 14%. I'm not sure about this data, but I think it's really low. And people that affirmate as pardos or brown are the majority. So I think even in my family, I didn't understand my blackness growing up. My mom is white. My dad is, he has brown skin. My grandmother is black and my grandfather is white. So it was like both grandmothers from both sides on my dad's and mom's, they were the opposite in terms of race. And then I came very mixed. And I remember growing up and people just saying like, yeah, I wish I had your skin tone because it's so tanned and beautiful. But they wouldn't say that to my grandmother who was black. And I always started to feel like it was a compliment. But in the end, like thinking today, I think it's a lot of internalized racism, or you're just trying to approve that person because, oh, you're darker than me, so I wish I was tanned as you. And I remember coming here to Europe and people saying that I had an exotic beauty, that I wasn't handsome or anything, I was just exotic. And that to me before felt like a compliment, but after I understood what that means, to me it's just...
Yeah, but it's in the nature of compliments is that I think, for example, like, you know, I'm going bald, but where I have hair, it's very thick. So when people say, oh, you have so much hair where you still have hair, I don't really think, I try not to treat it as a compliment because I have nothing to do with it, right? Mm-hmm. It's some protein got coded in my DNA way before I became an actual person that defines how thick my hair grows. And I know this is, you know, there are no actual hate crimes against the bald community, right? There are some people have reservations about it, and there are stereotypes about, you know, testosterone and stuff. I'm deliberately bringing a very mild example so as not to engage in the really, you know, thick racism debate. But I think it's, when it carries this much history, when someone is just, it's a throwaway comment, right? Mm-hmm. Like people think, oh, you know, Igor has a nice complexion. I wish, you know, I could have that complexion. And then you don't really, especially I think in Europe where slavery hasn't been a thing for over 200 years now.
Yeah.
Like background associated to it, where in Brazil you know that the person comes from the same cultural background, and that the exact same words are going to have a lot more weight behind them, right?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with how many rights you lose based on a commentary that someone can associate to you. So, yeah, I think in Brazil I never suffered racism. But it was hidden in the system, or nobody ever... Actually, I suffered racism in Brazil once. So I tend to say that I came out of the closet at least three times. First, as an LGBT person. Second, as a black person, because someone in Brazil came to me and said, you're not white, or you are... he used a very bad word.
What was the context? Like, did someone just come up to you in the street, say that, and walk away? Or
I was in a party, and this guy came to talk with me, and I rejected him, and then he said some racist words to me.
So he was upset because he denied.
Then when I moved to Hungary, I came out as Latino, which is different as well, because Brazilians don't understand themselves sometimes as Latinos because we are such a big country that speaks a different language than the neighbors, that we forget that we are also Latin Americans. So, and that coming out as a Latino was coming to Hungary and also to the US when I had the chance to travel there, that's how people see us. Mm-hmm. And I think all these things had to wear me in a way, and I had to put all these labels and try, this is my role in the world. Mm-hmm.
I think this is really interesting because to me, and I think to a lot of people, like, coming out seems to be something like I announced to others.
Yeah.
That this is who I am, but what you describe here sounds like a very internal process. This is this is you having the talk with yourself. You're saying, yes, like, okay, so this people see me as such, and I think, yes, because coming out as a term is used most often with in the LGBT context,
yeah,
and not the skin color or like. I don't even know what Latino / Latinx, whatever they, mm-hmm, whatever the preferred term is these days, is even any of these categories, right? It's like, it's more like a geographical, like Spanish people are not in that group, right?
And yeah,
it's even though like Latin, right? Like Italians, even though they speak a lot, French people speak, right, a Latin language, but they're not in that group. It's very well understood that this is anything Mexico and South.
Yeah,
on that continent.
It's associated with your ethnicity and your skin color. And yeah. And that's why I think coming out is a process. It's not just telling people, but it also you understanding yourself. I think
that's most of it. No, that's the actually important part.
Yeah,
because,
right,
other people, like, I think one of the things that keeps my blood pressure kind of low is when I get upset about someone seeing me in a way, I just feel like, I usually don't really care after 5 minutes about, mm-hmm, other people's things if they're not super close to me.
Yeah.
If I don't share a household or if they're not my very closest friends, if I see them in a way, 10 minutes pass and I forget about it. And I try and project, maybe it's not like that with other people, but I try and project this on other people and, yeah, like nobody cares.
Yeah.
Right? It's very scary and it's very soothing at the same time.
It's true. But if you, yeah, it depends on your personality as well. Some people can really wear comments for forever and start to think and base their lives on what other people think about them. So I think once you come out, I think you stop doing that, because then you're not wearing those comments anymore. You know who you are, and you will act accordingly. For example, I will know that I have to fight for respect. I know because I'm Black, Latino, and gay, I have to fight for respect and my rights, and I won't be hiding as much, mm-hmm, anymore. So, and even though that might have consequences, I think coming out is also this process of like, I know there are consequences and I will be brave enough to work them and try to I don't know, get around them and just live my life.
I think it could be like a blueprint, sort of, because I think everyone has something that they get overlooked for, or, you know, someone saying something very negative to your face is, mm-hmm, like one of the extremes, because people usually don't care enough to come up to you and say it.
Yeah.
But I think this whole sort of being okay with yourself, this is a very something that is in a pressure cooker if you are in this layers of, you know, oppressed minorities. But actually people who might be, you know, very much in the majority society also struggle with that kind of thing, because they also carry negative comments that were made to them. Yeah. Maybe their troubles aren't built into the system because everything, mm-hmm, everything is kind of okay for them, but I think like being mentally healthy should be, this is something that you could do even if you're like a middle management dude, mm-hmm, who has, you know, a loan and a family, but is like, oh, I don't know, I have issues with my, I cannot lift high enough, or like I'm not a good enough father because I'm not there for my kids, like all of these things that are who you are and you have trouble accepting.
Yeah.
I think it could be these well, not micro coming outs, but these just be okay with it, man. It's,
yeah,
like, I think it's I think this culture of coming out and saying stuff is, mm-hmm, it could be beneficial to the whole of society, because
for sure,
because I think this whole the sculpture of just press it down, shut up, no one cares.
Yes.
That kind of thing leads to a lot of frustration. And I think this is something that, like, this free flow of, this actually makes me feel really bad, I want to talk to somebody about it, is going to, like, elevate people, because they'll be, like, a bit more chill.
Yeah, it's this concept of self-awareness, right? And I think even as a minority, but not so minority, because I'm still a cisgender male, I have a lot of self-awareness issues in terms of, like, when am I being sexist? When am I being homophobic, even, with other people? Because you're raised in oppression. And I think if you understand the things that you're doing that might be harming someone around you, you will work towards fixing that, right? And then if people know that you're working towards that, it's much easier than actually just canceling someone, you know? There's this whole culture of canceling these days where you say something wrong and then people cancel you and you're done. I think there are cases where canceling culture really needs to happen because people are repeating the mistakes. But I think when you do a mistake and you understand what is the problem around your mistake and you fix it, I think you come out as a better person.
Yeah. The problem with that I have is this would be really nice if we were in ancient Greece and there was no digital technology, right?
Yes.
Like, I think this whole, you said something that was hurtful on purpose, but we're going to give you a second chance, that presumes that we're in this big agora and, like, everyone has, like, their voice is as loud as everyone else's. But because you have, you know, WhatsApp and, like, actually, side note, Twitter is almost completely non-existent in Hungary. And it's really funny to me. It's like, if you have 3,000 followers on Twitter, you're big. In Hungary. It's really awkward. Everyone has, you need to have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And Twitter in Hungary is like this, we completely forgot about it. It's like,
so where most of the political and discussions happen on Facebook, or?
Yeah, I think over 35, it's Facebook. Under 35, it's Instagram. And then Chinese spyware TikTok is making strong gains.
That's true. Because Twitter became big in Brazil, and it's all, like, now being very problematized as well as these agora, this place where people go and talk, and they're always angry. And everybody's angry at something. And
do you think, as a product design adjacent person or someone who does this as a profession, do you think that the reason why anger and outrage is something that drives these platforms is because the way relevancy or success of a post is quantified? Like, you assign a number to it, right? And then you become invested in pumping that number up.
Exactly.
So, do you think these platforms would be a bit more relaxed and there would be actual better flow of information if they were more like the forum boards where it didn't really count? It said how many times you posted before, but the discussion was like, A person said something, B person said something, and then someone else might come in, but there's no, you don't establish a hierarchy like, a person with a million followers just said this, so therefore their word, they're automatically more valuable as a source of information.
Yeah, I'm no pro in this sense. I'm no psychologist or anything. But what I've seen, at least from my personal experience, we're constantly seeking for validation. And we transformed validation into likes and comments. And even at work or any other space, if people don't validate you with a like or a comment, you feel incomplete these days. And I think it's weird how one simple design decision can change society for, like, a whole generation, I think. And I don't know how much time it will take for us to recover from that. And I really don't know how to answer, because I would have to be a professional to say that how we could solve that problem. I don't think that was your question, though, but I think designers, at least product designers, have that responsibility to think, how are people going to react to that specific decision that you added to your product? Mostly these days, that, for example, Twitter is now alerting people in Brazil. If you try to retweet a piece of news without opening the link, they're going to pop up a message and say, hey,
you might want to read this first.
You might want to read this first before you retweet. So decisions like that can help cleaning the mess that we created ourselves. But I think there is still a long way to go in fixing these issues. And yeah, we probably need to... I don't have an answer to what's...
Because, I don't know. I think there's going to be this kind of like pendulum swing of the same thing with like... that in any kind of like product that we took this way too far.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like, you know, the suburban... just conforming to the gender stereotype role of the 50s and early 60s, and then the late 60s came and it just swung way in the other direction, and you had, you know, free love and the hippie movement, and everyone was, you know, dropping the acid, and it was a whole mess in a different way. So that was also like taking it to the other extreme, and I'm talking about the US because that's a pretty clean example. And then the 80s, the Reagan era came in, and there was this new conservatism, and everyone like, no, back to the suburbs, like everyone should be just chill nuclear families. And I think maybe there's something like this of a swing coming backwards, where there might be, oh, where Facebook is getting rid of the like button, or like stuff like that, where we're just gonna try and get this artificial validation, and we're gonna try and get people off this very harmful like feedback loop of, I don't do stuff because I'm actually trying to document things. I do stuff because I need my daily dose of people appreciating me, who I am on this platform.
Yeah, and I think the future will be regulation for some reason, just like these extremes were regulated, like alcohol is regulated in Hungary, smoking is regulated. I think social media and how we interact with these platforms will also, and data will have to be regulated, because it's now almost like a currency, right? So, but there's no regulation to it. Whoever owns the most dictates the system.
Yeah, it's no surprise that GDPR has...
Yeah.
It's actually, you know, it's something that the big companies are trying to, like, work around, or it shows that it was, for all the panic and alarm it caused for smaller businesses, it actually does a pretty okay job of keeping the bigger ones in check, so...
Yes. But now you're always bombarded with, of course, we have cookies, do you accept? And, like, do you have an option? No.
I take the time to get the ticks out. I'm like, okay.
I've been doing that lately too, but it's proven to be a very exhausting job, but I'm trying to keep
it. But you know what it does sneakily? It's very... I realized just the other day is that I don't like going on new websites now. Because I get reminded, oh, I haven't been on this site yet, so I get faced with this. I got no marketing, no traffic measurement, no, I don't care. It's kind of like every time I visit a new website, I have to do a bit of admin work.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting that how when, you know, I'm almost 34, and when we had still dial-up internet, you could just go on a website and there was stuff there, and there was no, like, a lot of time on the internet now is spent with just filling out forms.
Exactly.
And it's really weird that how this playground of just crazy stuff like rotten.com and like really absurd internet is just now a bit of like standing in line at an office type of, it's not that much fun as it used to be.
Yeah.
Or there are like very much like places where, oh, this is the fun place. It's like labeled, right? Like this is where you can have fun on the internet, and this is where you need to fill out a form, and this is where, oh, please allow us to access your location, otherwise we cannot give you the fun. And it's like very...
There's always now there's a price for the free, right? Internet, I think the internet was born as a democratic environment, right? I think the whole purpose of the internet was to connect people.
I would argue that the genesis of the internet was to connect computer nodes inside the military so they can coordinate killing of people better, but...
Yeah. That's true. We romanticized the internet a little bit when it started to evolve. Yeah. But I think, today there is a price. I think if it's free, you're paying something. And I've watched this documentary that's pretty hyped now on Netflix.
Yeah.
But
I had my reservations about it. I think it could have been 25 minutes. They stretched it a bit.
Yeah, I think... Maybe for my mom, who doesn't know these things, I think she would probably just take away and what her takeaway of that documentary would be, ooh, the word is really effed up. And that's it. She would keep going with her life. But yeah, I think what I took away from that is this regulation thing. But yeah, and how nothing is free these days. I mean, and even if you're paying subscriptions, you're still paying an extra with your data and your behavior, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But do you think it's easier being, like, if you moved here in the 90s, mm-hmm. do you think you would have an easier time or a harder time?
Much harder time. Yeah. Actually, when I moved here in 2013, I didn't have a smartphone. My first smartphone I bought here in Hungary, so I was still using paper maps to go around.
Cool.
So I got that moment in life
How recent were the paper maps? When was the last?
The last one I used was in 2014. Like, because also back then in 2013-14, you didn't have free roaming around Europe. So when I was traveling around, I didn't have Google Maps to guide me. So I would always go to the tourist center and get the paper map. Yeah. So I think this was one of the biggest shocks when I moved back here, that I already had a phone and I could navigate. So I think I would see the city differently, but I had the chance to see Budapest in a different way without technology. Like, I mean, there was technology, but I didn't have access to it.
Yeah, don't badmouth maps. Maps are pretty cool. Paper maps.
For sure. And it was hard to learn at the beginning because I never had that before. Like, going in Brazil, I never had to use a map, right, to go around.
Hmm. Okay. Igor, our time is almost up.
Yep.
You want to give any shout-outs? Any recommendations? If you're listening to this, bring a paper map or not.
Yeah, I mean, give value to paper maps. I think they're really great. I just want to give a shout out to everybody listening. I love Budapest. I love the country. I learned a lot here, and I owe a lot to everything that I've been living here. And yeah, just be yourself. And yeah, I think that's it. Be yourself.
Okay. Thank you. This has been another episode of Expat on Tilos 90.3. Játszunk egy zenét, meg lesznek hírek Free SFE. Ciao. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This was a fast episode of the Expat Show, recorded in October of 2020. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
Tilos Rádió hírei következnek.
Sziasztok, kedves Tilos Rádió hallgatók! Ez itt a Déli Báb. Mindenkit szeretettel üdvözlünk. Talán annyiban speciális kiadás ez a műsor, hogy megpróbálunk titeket hergelni az esti bulira, a maratonra, és felhívni a figyelmeteket arra is, hogy itt a lehetőség, hogy támogassátok a rádiót, ami gondolom már ezerszer elhangzott, meg mindenhonnan ez folyik gyakorlatilag, de hát ezek tények. Tudtok nekünk segíteni, így azt nagyon szépen megköszönjük. Sokat tesztek hozzá így a működésünkhöz, ahhoz, hogy tudjunk dolgozni ebben a rádióban. De viszont cserébe remek programokkal szolgálunk nektek ma is, csak úgy, mint az egész héten, csak úgy, mint az egész hét folyamán. Meg is osztok veletek pár ilyen fellépőt, és pár kerti színpadon Korai Electric lesz, előtte a Slow Presso, valamint a Korai után az FM XX All Stars tombolasója lesz majd. A nagy színpadon The Acoustic Manual Techno Party, Operencia, Jó Magam, és utána pedig Parahalú. Emellett még lesz Cökszponzón, ahol Papa és Alagi játszik, Nova Gravity, Kalumet, Katami és Switch Nolli, valamint DJ a kertben, Era, Toge, Sneg, Radja, Lucky, mit hagytam ki? A teremben Transnomád, Dübel, Grabant, és még sokan mások. Biztos kihagytam rengeteg mindenkit, de hát nagyon hosszú a sor. Gyertek el, és nézzétek meg, hallgassátok meg őket, minket pontosabban. Hát kb. Ennyi, és jó szórakozást ehhez a műsorhoz. Aztán, ha játok és tehetitek, akkor még egyszer felhívom figyelmeteket rá, hogy támogassátok, légy szíves a rádiót bármennyivel, sokat segítetek vele. Ha tehetitek egy ezressel, ha tehetitek, akár többel is lehet, mindenki a saját pénztárcájához mérten. Az lenne a legjobb. Köszönjük szépen! Jó szórakozást a műsorhoz és az esti bulihoz még egyszer. Sziasztok! I'm going to go to the hospital.
Thank you. játszani egy trompétnál mint Einstein.